Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
Let's go. We're here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. This is John Williams. We're here until 3, and on Saturdays, we're on from 1 to... No, we're on from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Everybody's a little tired today. Thanks for tuning in on social media. Look for me as WGN King John. And remember, on my Facebook page, WGN King John, and at WGNradio.com, we post a daily web poll question. We call it the News Click. In fact, let's get that out of the way, Producer Elif. Not that it's a thing we don't enjoy or appreciate your participation in, but it wasn't political, and we're going to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday and last night and today for part of the show. But yesterday's News Click was about this.
The Blackhawks fired coach Joel Quenneville. A. That's sad, but the right call, 43%. B. That's sad and the wrong call, 57%.
So 57 said wrong call, but 43% said, yeah, the coach Q's got to go. I can't think of a more beloved coach in this town than Coach Q in a very long time. So off he goes. So that was yesterday's News Click. Today's News Click asks you about the fact that the House and the Senate are split now, and are you happy or not about that fact? That is, it's going to be a good thing that we have the House and Senate divided, or it's going to be a bad thing because now nothing will get done. And if what happened this afternoon at the president's press conference is any indication of how things are going to go, nothing will get done. What happened today at the president's press conference is going to be remembered as the same press conference that Sean Spicer had after the inauguration. Remember, we've got a new administration. This is the day after the inauguration, or maybe the afternoon of, and out comes Sean Spicer, and he set the tone for what would be for the next 2 years. It was hostile. There was divisiveness. There was a real stretch of the truth. Nobody was using the L word yet, but doggone it, that was bizarre and angry and not true. Sean Spicer's very first press conference to the press and to America. Now, the morning after the midterm election, we had the same sort of head spinning. What the heck was that press conference? I think what happened today is what happens when everyone's tired. The president did not look his best. The media did not behave its best. Donald Trump was there with as white pockets of eyes as you've ever seen on him. He had the orange tan going and then these powder white puffs on either side of his nose. He looked all dusted up and he was just sort of angry. And the media gave him no room. I mean, they were there to ask questions that you may find divisive in and of themselves, and his answers were hostile. It got out of hand, literally at one point. There's a woman who looks like Hope Hicks, but it's not, but a tall, attractive, slender, long brown-haired woman who's handing the mic from one member of the media to the other. Jim Acosta had it from CNN. And at one point, when Acosta asked his question, she tried to take the microphone back. He wouldn't give it to her. And the two of them were literally back and forth, arm wrestling with the microphone, as the president was telling Costa to sit down and that he wouldn't answer his question. It was really bizarre. I'm going to play a little of that audio for you later on the show today. And I'm going to play for you some of the audio of J.B. Pritzker's speech last night. Oh, my gosh. Literally, I told you yesterday, when I sat in the booth yesterday to vote for governor, I looked at the two names at the top of the ticket, and I thought, I have to make a decision now. And I could not vote for JB. I have to tell you, neither of them inspired me. Neither of them made me think, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to throw in with you, fella. Here we go. I didn't have that feeling about either of them. Not even close. And so literally as I cast my vote, I was making the decision as my pen went to paper. Then last night, J.B. Pritzker wins. And I think what happens is when you have the luxury of going into Election Day up by 20 points, you get to work on a good speech. His speech made me feel good about Illinois. You know who really feels good about their state? Minnesotans. They have Minnesota pride. Texans love Texas. Ask them, they'll tell you. Don't ask them, they'll tell you. Illinoisans run from their history and their heritage and their culture. And Chicagoans are kind of uneasy about some of the things that people know them for. Pritzker got up there last night, and I'm telling you, that's the first time I recall somebody just saying, hey, here's what Illinois is, here's who we are. And I thought, damn right, son, let's go. If Pritzker had been that on the campaign trail, he would have won by 40 points. Okay, that was just my reaction to the speech. I'm telling you, you probably didn't listen to all of it. It's about 8 minutes of your very busy day, but I was inspired, and you'll be glad you hear that in part in this hour. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. But I also asked Judy Pilek to come into the studio from the newsroom. She was listening to our show yesterday as we were all voting. Hi, Judy. How are you?
Hello.
Welcome back to the studio.
Thanks for having me. I had to walk about 5 paces.
So yesterday I expressed this frustration as a voting American in Chicago. I looked at my ballot. I had no choice for my state senator, my state representative, for the president of my county board. I had no choice. I could vote Democrat or not at all. Same with my sheriff and same with maybe it was my treasurer. I'm trying to remember what the other constitutional officer was. But for these marquee positions, it was Democrat or nothing. And it was that way for most of the judges I was looking at. My options as a voter in Chicago yesterday were Democrat or not.
And I'm going to say that's probably your option for years in Chicago. Like in DuPage County, where I live, it's been the same, but just Republicans.
So were you looking? Okay, so you can tell that I'm relatively new as a voter to Cook County. This
right.
is my first election cycle.
I'm telling you, there's hardly ever a Republican on for those.
I guess I know that, but it's yeah. just never so stark. And even though I knew Chicago and actually, this is my first time to vote as a Chicagoan in a even year. Numbered year. I knew that, but I always thought that the Democrats won just because it was a Democrat town. I didn't know the Democrats won because you couldn't vote for a Republican if you wanted
right.
to.
Right. Well, because
there was no option.
Why would you, as a Republican, want to run? You know what I mean? You have to look at it that way, too. Just like in DuPage and some of the other Republican strongholds, the Republicans have such a lock on it that no one even runs. First time in 25 years I can remember where I believe almost every race had a Democrat.
Usually it's just Republicans.
Right. There's
usually
no,
your ballot is what mine
what
was.
What yours was. So when you were saying that, I thought, wow, that's so weird because I had the opposite feeling today. But 25 years now, I think I've been voting in DuPage. It's always been like that. There's not even a choice.
And it's funny because I tend to vote Democrats, although I voted Republican yesterday, I voted Green, and I voted mostly Democrat. For my state representative, I did not want to vote for the Democrat, and I left that blank. I would have voted for the Republican. I do that. I cast protest votes. I would have voted for the Republican just to tell my Democrat I didn't want him. I didn't have that option. So the only thing I could do was undervote. I left it blank. But imagine if you're a Democrat living in DuPage County, say, and all along you go to the ballot and you don't feel like you're participating.
Right, yeah. Well, that changed with, I think it was maybe... Because I think it was pre-Hillary, but there was some point where it started to become much more. And now it is much more. Obviously, there was a Democrat in every race. It was just crazy to me.
That's interesting, though, because I that's bad for the process. Like if you're a Democrat and you live in Chicago and you go, attaboy, we run the roost. And look at Illinois now. You know, we've got a Democrat in governorship. We've got the Democrat.
There are no Republicans in state office.
This yeah. state has never been bluer than it is right now. I don't think that in general is good. And I guarantee you, wherever you are, to not have a credible candidate against the person that you're voting for is just bad for the process.
No, and see, that's I thought Erica Harrell did a great job. She's a Republican. She went for that office. And that traditionally... one of the few offices held by a woman, treasurer as well, Judy Bartopinka, we had, the Republican. So, yeah, I thought we would get one Republican in state office.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it goes.
Well, the people voted. And yeah. then I was also wondering, what was going to happen today? I'm just looking, Judy, at the same screen Steve Bertrand is looking at, and that is that the Dow, right now, is up 418 points. That's for a lot of reasons. But I worry that if the markets interpreted a split House and Senate at the national level as the inability for the president now to get his economic agenda through, we'd have hell to pay. It sure isn't reading it that
way. Well, and I heard Steve Alexander earlier. It was a great point. He said, no, the market likes this. It likes that there are now more checks and balances.
How about that?
You're looking at it one way, but looking at it the other way, that now that it's a two-party system, that it will be good for the markets.
I think they're all making it up.
What do you mean by that?
Well, is Alexander still around? I hope not. He can't hear me say this.
Okay, go ahead, Steve.
But I'll tell him. Go ahead.
Coward.
No, I mean, I was talking to Terry Savage about this, too, and she said she thought the market was looking for a reason to go up. And she said over time, the market does well with a Republican president in a Democratic House, and even better, the flip. But as far as today is concerned, I mean, I don't understand what the House changing, how that's going to impact anything the president does. They weren't getting anything through anyway.
How it's going to impact business, anything? What do you mean?
Well, so much of it is perception anyway, right?
Business tends to like the Republican view, right? I mean,
sure.
The Democrats are going to be more likely to work toward regulation and things like that. So it doesn't make. I'm no expert. Steve knows more about it than I do, but it just doesn't make sense.
I'm sorry.
Maybe the markets like democracy. Have you thought about that?
I've thought that the markets like a tax cuts for the rich and for businesses,
things that
regulations, and things that the Democrats would not endorse.
Right.
Okay, so if you want more of that, or if you want the execution or the finalization of these things the president's been touting, good luck now. But you see my point, right, Steve? Evidently, though, the market isn't reading it the way I thought they would. I thought we'd have a stalemate and that things would halt. For instance, the president wants to do infrastructure spending. The president wants to do this and that and this and that. It's weird. The Republicans want to do a lot of deficit spending these days. That's the Democrats' game. But I wonder if the Democrats are going to put a halt to some of that.
Well, Nancy Pelosi said she talked to him and they thought they could work together in infrastructure. But you know what? Words don't matter in this government anymore. So I don't know why anyone would trade on them. Right? I mean, how many times has the administration talked about infrastructure?
Said one thing and then done another.
And in the House, too. I mean, they can say they're going to work with them, but I don't know. I don't expect that.
And you brought up regulations, Steve, but really, besides the tax cut for the wealthy, what concrete things have been done? There's been a lot of talk, but I don't know that.
Well, there's been a lot of executive orders and in easing of government regulation.
A lot of regulations have been rolled back.
But I think they've gone right to court.
Yeah.
I know, but haven't they? I don't know that anything's actually been gone forward because it's either held up in the courts or it has been stopped somehow.
It's all executive policy. They've reduced a lot of regulations.
Fewer regulations in place now? Well, I'm surprised that the market is right now up 430. Hooray for it. Hooray for it. Our number is 312-981-7200 if you want to text or call. But just what you thought about how your vote went yesterday, what you saw last night, and what you heard today. And we're just kind of feeding back with you right now. I'm John Williams. This is WGN. One other thing about your voting process yesterday, Judy, and that was you voted with your daughter, right?
Yes. But first let me say it's interesting that you didn't know who you were voting for governor. I found it to be surprising and very annoying that the woman in front of me voting, because we had one computerized booth, which, think about that, voters, next time.
Well, we had none where I voted, but keep going.
Okay, so we had one, and then they had, I don't know, 15, 20 manual booths, which I should have taken, which my daughter did, so she took the manual ballot. I opted for the computer. But the woman who was at the computer and was facing me, I was just watching her because she was very pensive and thinking about, I'm like, are you kidding me?
You haven't made up your mind yet?
For how long? And I could see one race where you're like
I
you.
Saw people, Judy.
But she was doing it every race. It took forever. So in the meantime, my daughter was sitting at a booth, and she's mildly mentally disabled, my daughter. And we go through the issues, and she's very well equipped to vote. And they were very accommodating, I thought, because early on when she was just even checking in, it was obvious there was maybe some issue there. And so you heard a lot of Kaylee, 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 especially for me. Anyway, she's sitting down, and she's got her sample ballot, which we had gone through, and we had marked. So she was just pretty much
filling it out.
At first, she was very concerned about cheating, and I had to explain to her how it was not cheating.
That she brought in the answer
sheet. Yes, she brought, but she got to a race, apparently, that we had skipped over. So she turned and said, Mom, we didn't do this one. And I was like, oh, worried. I said, Kaylee, I cannot help you now. And the judge standing there said, you can help her.
Yeah, I've heard that you can.
What? I said, and you know what? So it just depends. Some of the judges in the previous years
were very accommodating, and some are not.
Some are, you can't even bring that newspaper in. And I know I can, but no, you can't. So I helped her, went over there, and I thought it was just a very, everything was just nice for me yesterday.
I think it's a great thing. Boy, this sounds cliche, but the exercise of the vote. And my new favorite politician, J.B. Pritzker, spoke about that yesterday, too.
Until he raises your taxes, John.
Until he raises my taxes.
And also on that point, really, you don't, I brag about Chicago all the time.
Really?
No matter where.
I do, too.
I am so proud of living in Chicago. Not necessarily Illinois. I don't ever say I'm from Illinois. Ever.
Maybe that's what I was picking up on, that he was making, I mean, that was a speech for Illinois. It was directed to Chicagoans, but it was a speech for Illinois, and I just thought it was...
Sometimes you forget you live in Illinois.
You do, and you shouldn't, and he wanted you to remember the good. Okay, thank you, Judy. Nice
Absolutely.
To see you. You'll hear Judy later on here on WGN. See, we'll continue to follow that Dow. I mean, why not?
Well, as long as it's going up, it's fun to follow.
It's exactly right, Mr. Bertrand.
Where is it now, John?
473. Are we playing the weather game in reverse now?
Yeah.
Because I think Producer Elif is watching that for us. Producer Elif, where's the Dow, please? Oh, stand by. Producer Elif, where's the Dow, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 463 points at 26,097 points, John.
Woohoo!
True dat. John, I felt the same way about the governor's race. I voted Libertarian for the first time in my life. Somebody named Harold texted in a little while ago, and they says, John, how could you vote for Bruce Rauner? I thought you were a union guy. Sign Harold. Harold, you're assuming you know how I voted. I said I couldn't vote for JB. I didn't say how I voted. I've got pages of texts here, and we'll run through some of them. We'll also take some of your phone calls, starting with Brian, who's been waiting a while. We appreciate that. Brian, you're on WGN Radio. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon, John. I love your show, especially about 2:45 on Friday afternoon.
That's a good thing when we do our bright side. Yes, sir.
Absolutely right. But no, when I went to the polls, I actually went twice yesterday, first thing in the morning to vote for myself. Not when I vote for myself, but put my votes in. And as I was telling Al, that one of my neighbors was there as well, and I said I was going to write him in as instead of Preckwinkle, because there was no opposition to it.
Right.
The judge said, you can't write in anybody who's not authorized as a write-in.
I think this was a problem for Violetta Padromedic yesterday. V wanted to write in a name. And I said, you go ahead and put that proverbial Mickey Mouse in, and I think they throw your ballot out if it's not a registered write-in name. It has to be somebody who, I believe, has said, I'm an eligible write-in candidate. Am I right about that?
That makes sense, because none of the people I voted for won.
None of the people you wrote
well, the second time I went was to take my 19-year-old daughter for the first time work.
Nice.
And just give Judy a piece of advice. Bring a 110-pound German Shepherd with you, and the voting seems to go a lot quicker.
Well, I have enjoyed those conversations with parents who described the first time their kid voted. Maybe because the kid was excited, or maybe because the kid was a little lackadaisical about it. And the parents said, oh, no, mister. Hey, missy, you're not going to vote. You are going to vote. I don't care how you vote. And actually, I kind of do. But more important than you vote the way I want you to vote, you get your butt over there. And that's a great moment. I mean, there's some rites of passage in your children's lives. When they walk, when they drive, when they drink, when they graduate, when they vote is a big one. It's a great thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I actually thanked the gentleman behind me because, unfortunately, she didn't register before she went to vote. So
same
it took a little bit longer, and the line was a little bit long, which was great to see.
Yeah.
The gentleman behind me, because people kept huffing behind, just relax, it's her first time. And thank you, sir. That's very nice of you.
You know how they have those stickers in the windows, student driver. It should be student voter. First time voter. We should get him a helmet and just say, relax, I'm trying to figure this thing out.
I know, but no matter how many times I go, I still feel like a first time voter. Something about it never really gets comfortable.
Well, and then there's a moment of truth when you submit it into the machine and you think, okay, machine, I'm counting on you to work here because this is really important to me right now.
I know. I almost like, I always look at the girl. I'm like,
are you sure?
Ready?
Here we
is
go.
This the winning ticket?
Well, at least they haven't taken Violetta away yet. They're taking selfies.
I know. All right, Brian, listen, thanks for listening. We appreciate your call.
Right. Have a great day, guys.
This is Eric. You're on WGN. Eric, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
My suburban Cook County voting experience was an absolute disaster. I walked into the polling place. It reeked of booze. All the judges mumbled unintelligibly, and I had never voted with that giant poster board paper ballot before. So they sent me to the wrong line twice, and then the one judge says, oh, go stand in this line over here. So I'm waiting. I had three people in front of me. They got to me, and he takes my ballot, puts it in the machine. He goes, oh, it's not doing anything. And I said, well, I didn't even vote yet. They told me to stand in this line. And he goes, oh, no, well, go sit in those chairs over there. And they only had three chairs available to sit in. So then the actual voting booths, if that's what you want to call them, were very, very cramped the way they had them set up. So I was trying to squeeze between a voting booth and a wall. I'm tripping on a lady's purse, and I had never voted before with those giant poster boards, so I had to sit and read the instructions to figure out how that worked. Because I'm used to the old way, where you slip the ballot in, and it's got the two holes, and you put it over the little pegs and go through the book.
Yeah.
But it was just bad from the word go.
Well, thank God you got through it and voted. Did you vote, or did you just have
that? Did you just say, that's it, I'm out of here, or did you get through the whole process, sir?
No, I voted, of course. I figured, well, it's going to be a waste of time if I don't vote, and I'm civic-minded. So it was just, it was very confusing. The judges didn't know their right hand from their left hand, and it was just a big mess. So,
well, I'm sorry about that, but Violetta, I'm glad you voted, and I appreciate your call. Thanks for sounding off, Eric.
Okay.
Yeah, have a good day. I looked at the judges that were judging in my polling place, and I got the impression that they were not full-time employees outside this little side gig that they were doing, and it was a gig that none of us wanted to do. So where they were maybe not super efficient or perfect, and I had no problems, but I thought, if there are problems, maybe that's on the rest of us smarty pants to get a little more involved rather than asking somebody else to do this civic responsibility. Because it feels like jury duty. You know, it's important and you want it done, but you just want somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel about being a voting judge.
I always like to hear their arguments, when they have a discussion. You know, it's like, well, who's going to drive that over there? We're going to need this type of judge. Well, that type of judge is signing people in, so I don't know if we're going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, they go on for like 10 minutes. I'm like, you want me to drive these votes over there? Like, what are you guys talking about? You need to, like,
we need to have this nailed down before right now.
I know,
well, I'm telling
so
you, in my polling place yesterday, a woman just stood up in the middle of the room and goes, does anybody want to be a judge? We're a little short today. David Orr, the Cook County clerk, was here, who handles the suburban Cook County voting, and he said, yeah, that happens.
Well, there's certain responsibilities that he was saying
right.
Anyone could do, like, if you know, to take...
Operate the machine or
pass
something
out pens.
Like. Yeah, right, exactly. So they were short of
pens.
That.
I don't know. They have a lot of different jobs. I was an election judge, and I found it always very fun.
This is Kathleen. You're on WGN.
You know what, John? Before you talk to Kathleen, we're going to take a bit of a break here and go to ABC News. President Trump had his news conference earlier today, at times bizarre, and one of the questions he was asked was about staff members. He said he was happy with many of his cabinet secretaries, but we are getting word this afternoon, fewer than 24 hours after the polls close, that there will be a change at the Justice Department, that indeed Attorney General Jeff Sessions is out. More in this live report from ABC News.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Aaron Katursky. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is resigning effective immediately. The resignation of Jeff Sessions comes at the request of President Trump. Earlier today, the president said there would be a shakeup in his cabinet, but he did not disclose any names. Now, ABC News has learned that Jeff Sessions is resigning effective immediately as the nation's attorney general at the request of President Trump. I'm Aaron Katursky. This has been a special report from ABC News.
So I don't know if that's the other shoe dropping, John, or just which shoe it is, but the change there at the Justice Department was even more than telegraphed. I think pretty much many people expected it. I don't know if they expected it quite this quickly after the midterm elections.
He was asked about Kelly or the Interior Department. He said something maybe next week, but yeah, I didn't know that it would happen this fast. And in the past, I think we know that, what was it, Trump wanted Sessions to quit, or that Sessions had said he was going to quit and other cabinet members talked him into staying. I mean, there's been this tension all along.
He's clearly wanted Sessions to leave. I mean, he's...
So what happens to Rosenstein then? Is he now the acting...
Attorney General? I don't know exactly how that would work,
and
to be honest with you.
What does this do to the Mueller investigation and the oversight of that?
Well, it doesn't change it yet, unless the president were to bring in a new attorney general who would not recuse himself and then would have the authority to end the investigation if he wanted. Now, I mean, even Senator Durbin said probably a month or 6 weeks ago that he could see Sessions leaving and approving a new attorney general as long as that new attorney general promised in the confirmation hearings, you know, not to end the Mueller investigation.
Okay, that's the latest from ABC. Steve will have another newscast for you. More information if it happens within the next 13 minutes, if not the news again at 2. It's 1:47 on WGN. Your texts include these. Hey, John, the Dems have been in charge of Illinois for 50 years. How's it going? John, look at the maps of voting districts in Illinois. This from 847. The state legislative map of Chicago looks like a stack of sausages. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll have to go look that up. John, are you forgetting the tariffs? The market, which is right now up 452, may be hoping that they can be reversed or softened with a split Congress. Thanks for all of your texts. Lots of calls today. I told you I wanted you to hear some of the cheer of J.B. Pritzker last night. We'll get to that next on WGN. Hey, John, I felt the same way voting for governor. I voted Libertarian for the first time. There was a texter here whose message I wanted to pass along. This one from 847 said, John, I'm a state employee. With Pritzker, we'll finally get a raise. It's been 4 years without a pay raise. That is not good. This texter says, when I voted, my next door neighbor was in front of me and they couldn't find his name on their list. So I said, well, I'll vouch for him. I know him. He's my neighbor. And the Grinch looked at me and said, lady, 300 people told me today they're all next door neighbors.
The Grinch
says 773. Well, all righty then. 815 said, shout out to Prairie Grove, voting there, great as always. 708 said, electronic booths didn't work. The judges seemed clueless for us. We had to do a paper ballot, so corrupt. Why do you go there? 847 said this, I voted warily in Dallas, Texas. When a first-time voter came up to vote, the judges screamed, first-time voter, and everyone applauded. I don't know what to think of this. John, election judges said 630, work 5A to 9P. If lucky to end that early. There's pay, but not even minimum wage. My polling place had a shortage of judges, and I recruited two former judges to join us. Many DuPage sites were short on judges. 630 said, as an election judge, I can verify that all write-in candidates, Violetta, must be pre-registered. And this from 630, John. I miss you yelling out the temperatures and guessing them for different locations. You're usually way off, but that's why I love it.
Who is this guy?
I don't know, but that's fake news. I think I'm always within the margin of error.
Which is what?
Very high. John, could you please do that again? Signed, Jackie, a loyal listener.
Come on, Jackie.
Steve's day just got worse. It says here the Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive patient-centered healthcare experience at their dental institute, family medicine clinic, speech language institute, physical therapy institute, and eye institute. At these clinics, you get exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. 630-743-4500. Midwestern University Clinic is your family's home for healthcare. Last night, after he won, this is the luxury of knowing for a long time that you're going to win by a lot. lot. You get to work on a speech. J.B. Pritzker said this.
You all win the Game of Thrones Award tonight.
Good line.
Voting is an act of optimism. That the levers of our democracy still work. You embody that optimism. You light the beacon fire on the hill of history that signals from one generation to another that these are the things that we stand and fight for. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you for your faith in Juliana and me. Tonight, I want to share a story from the beginning of this campaign journey. I announced my candidacy on April 6th of 2017 in the field house of Grand Crossing Park here in Chicago. More than a century and a half ago, there was a train wreck in Grand Crossing, a disaster that was so tragic and so profound that it indelibly marked the community there for generations to come. The history of Grand Crossing was somewhat cynically noted when we chose its field house as the announcement site for my campaign. But I found a profound significance in Grand Crossing, a reminder that we have no right to walk away from the broken places of our past with no thought about how to mend them for the future. After all, in the years that followed the train wreck, the people of Grand Crossing came together to build a community, to show their faith in the power of their commitment to one another as neighbors. Today, there is a beautiful park there where seniors gather for exercise classes, families come to play, and children learn to swim amidst a diverse community of their peers. In Illinois, we have a history of building ourselves up from broken places, and the bonds we form in the process become the steel girders that hold us all together. I see those bonds in communities all across the state of Illinois, communities touched by both triumph and tragedy. From towns affected by tornadoes, to cities redefining their economies, to neighborhoods of immigrants looking for hearth and home, to black and brown communities overcoming discrimination and disinvestment. There is a special faith in the future, a light that burns in people who know both the agony of the hill and the freedom of the hilltop. And as your governor, I want to hoist that light high and let it show us the way.
I'm writing this down. The agony of the hill and the thrill of the victory on the hilltop. What was that? That was just some good stuff. J.B. Pritzker's speech last night. Then he spoke about losing both of his parents before he was 18 or in his 18th year and how he renewed his commitment, and it was just so nicely packaged last night. Okay, I'll stop talking about JB's speech, but if I get a chance, I'll play more of it, and if you haven't heard it, I suggest you click through. Because then he started to say good things about various cities in the state of Illinois. You know, from the Superman statue and the big ball of string or whatever it is to the Super Bowl shuffle and the Cubs winning the World Series. I mean, he was just sort of clicking off things that make you feel good about being an Illinoisan. And, you know, the pledge and promise to make things better. So let's hope that all of that happens. We're coming up on 2 o'clock. If you have not heard, Jeff Sessions is out. We also want to talk a little bit about the president's press conference today, which went about 90 minutes and was, I think, the moral equivalent of Sean Spicer's inauguration press conference. I'll play some of that for you, too.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have
to. If you need it.
Here's John Williams.
Good to have it. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. This is John Williams. Thanks for tuning in. We're here weekdays till 3.
Lord have mercy.
Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. This Saturday, I will be at Elgin Community College, so I'll take a pass on the Saturday show. You can join me on stage with Teddy Roosevelt. Tickets at WGNradio.com/events. The topic will be leadership. TR and I on stage having some fun, yucking it up, learning a little about the U.S. of A., and you get to ask questions. I cannot think of a better way to spend an hour and a half Saturday, 10:30 in the morning. I talked to somebody the other day, and they said, well, Elgin, that's kind of a drive. Yeah, well, I don't care where you live. If you're near Elgin, it's great for you. If you're not, I promise you, you will be glad you invested the time heading on up there. Okay, I want to do Play For You More JB speech. I don't know that we're going to have time. I will be playing part of Donald Trump's, what has been described as, bizarre press conference. Steve, do you agree with me? I think this is apt. I believe that was truly the moral equivalent of, it's serving notice. Here's what it's going to be like going forward. It's the moral equivalent of the Sean Spicer press conference when he was asked about the size of the inaugural crowd. It was the day after Trump becomes president. We wondered what this is going to be like, and we found out that moment. Here's the president for 90 minutes going on this bizarre tirade. Listen, Jim Acosta and CNN, they need to seriously think about it. They're not doing it perfectly. I'm mad at CNN, and I'm mad at Jim Acosta, completely disappointed in what he did at that press conference today. But so did April Ryan. So did ABC. So did NBC. So,
well, I didn't see it, John. So what did they do?
Well, okay, let's just do this. I won't play 5 minutes of it, but here's how it starts. Listen carefully. They're all handing the microphone around, each taking a turn to ask the president a question today, and it comes to Jim Acosta from CNN.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to challenge you on one of the statements that you made in the tail end of the campaign.
Stop it right there. He said, Mr. President, I want to challenge you on one of the statements you made. Okay? But really, Jim, are you going to plow new ground here? This is an ongoing argument that Jim Acosta is having with the president, and I just think it's telling the way he begins it. I want to challenge you.
In the midterms. That this caravan was an invasion. As you know,
I,
Mr. President,
I consider it to be an invasion.
As you know, Mr. President, the caravan was not an invasion. It's a group of migrants moving up from Central America towards the border with the U.S.
Thank you for telling me that.
And why did you characterize it as such?
I consider it an invasion. You and I have a difference of opinion.
But do you think that you demonized immigrants
I want them to come into the country, but
okay,
they have to.
So the president has the privilege of calling it whatever he wants. Anybody that's paid any attention who is interested in the answer knows what it is, and they know what the president's doing. And Acosta asking, why do you call it that? The president's answer was predictable, because I think it is, or because I think it's going to be helpful to do so. But I mean, come on, really, Acosta? You're going to take this moment to give us 2.0 of this argument you guys have been having? I'm completely with Acosta in his interpretation of it and the ill will I think the president is spreading. But I just wonder what the point is of CNN doing this.
Come in legally. You know, they have to come in, Jim, through a process. I want it to be a process. And I want people to come in, and we need the people. You know why we need the people, Dashi? Because we have hundreds of companies moving in. We need the people.
But your campaign had an ad showing migrants climbing over walls and
so on.
Well,
that's true.
They
weren't actors.
They're not going to be doing
that. They weren't actors. Well, no, it's true. Do you think they were actors? They weren't actors. They didn't come from Hollywood. These were people. This was an actual, you know, it happened a few days ago. And
they're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
All right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough.
Mr. President, pardon me, ma'am. Mr. President.
He's literally now wrestling with the woman for the microphone.
On the Russia investigation, are you concerned that you may have
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation? Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person.
They're maybe 10 feet from each other, Acosta and the president.
They're very close.
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead.
In Jim's defense, I've traveled with him and watched him. He's a diligent reporter who busts.
Well, I'm not a big fan of yours either. So
I understand.
To be honest.
So let me ask you a question, if I can.
You are the best,
Mr. President. You repeatedly over the course.
Okay, just sit down, please. Well, when you report fake news, when you report fake news, which CNN does a lot, you are the enemy of the people. Go ahead,
Mr. President. Over the course of the last several days of the campaign, sir,
Sir, at the end of the campaign, you repeatedly said that Americans need to fear Democrats. You said Democrats would unleash a wave of violent crime that endangers families everywhere. Why are you pitting
Americans?
Because
they're very weak on crime.
Why are you pitting Americans against one another, sir?
Peter, what are you trying to be him?
No, I'm just asking a question.
Let me just tell you.
And then he goes on and gives an answer about how he cares about freedom and safety in America and stuff like that.
I don't know how you can question why CNN is doing what they're doing.
I think they're doing what I do. That's Jim Acosta, you know, being fascinating and great drama. An hour and a half into this press conference, the president said, do you want me to stop or keep going? Are we having fun? And everybody goes, yeah, keep going, because this train wreck wouldn't stop. So the president likes it, and it's all entertaining. But CNN, in my mind, is supposed to be a news network. And Acosta is just ticked. He's just throwing stuff.
I disagree with you in saying, in his first word, saying I'm going to challenge you. I think that's fair. I think he's saying, look, I don't believe you, and I'm going to challenge you on what you said. I got that. But then I do agree with you. The rest of that, he did not handle himself in a way you would expect a professional to handle himself at a presidential news conference. Now, the president certainly didn't handle himself in a way you would expect a presidential news conference either. But I'm with you on Acosta there.
Well, so it got worse, if you will. April Ryan, the AP reporter who herself has had a few run-ins with the president, without the microphone in her hand, just stood up and started to ask a question.
If it's unfair to the country and it's costing millions of dollars, why don't you just
give him the mic, please? I've answered the question. Okay. Go ahead, take the mic. Well, I'll give you voters. I will give you voter suppression. You just have to sit down, please. Sit down. I didn't call you. I'll give you voter suppression. Take a look at the CNN polls, how inaccurate they were. That's called voter suppression. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm not responding. I'm responding to. Excuse me. I'm not responding to you. I'm talking to this gentleman. Will you please sit down? Excuse me. Would you please sit down? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now that the House of Representatives
very hostile.
Has
it's such a hostile media. It's so sad. You ask me about. No, you rudely interrupted him. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Do your demands remain the same to the United States Congress on?
Okay, so then there was another question, but April Ryan just eventually sat down with the look of resignation on her face. Just one more soundbite for you. This is a reporter from PBS's NewsHour, and the woman did have the microphone. It was her turn to ask this question.
Hi, Mr. President. Yemi Shelsender with PBS NewsHour. On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that the president. That's such a racist question.
There are some people that say that now the Republican Party is seen as supporting white nationalists because of your rhetoric. What do you make of that?
I don't believe it. I don't know. Why do I have my highest poll numbers ever with African Americans? Why do I have among the highest poll numbers with African Americans? I mean, why do I have my highest poll numbers? That's such a racist question. Honestly? I mean, I know you have it written down and you're going to tell me. Let me tell you, it's a racist question.
And Mr. President, I
love
ask...
You know what the word is? I love our country. I do. You have nationalists, you have globalists.
He says he's a nationalist. He's on our side. Tom, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say, Tom? You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, John. I'm getting kind of mixed opinions with what you're saying, because you're kind of coming off both sides, like you're saying that the press is attacking the president, but even if you listen to all three clips, I mean, it clearly was the other way around. I mean, yeah, there may have been some procedural things, some people speaking over each other, but just the tone from the press wasn't as vindictive as the tone from the president.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess the president's a given in my world. That's what you get. And I'm wondering what, say, a Jim Acosta expects to get, except an argument with the president, particularly Jim Acosta, when he asked that question. I think the other ones were fair game.
He's getting ratings.
Yeah, listen, I guess I'm a little disappointed in both sides, Tom, but you listened to that exchange and you're just mad at the president. Is that it?
No. Like I said, there's some procedural things I thought, but just the tone, the condescension, the vileness, and the tone.
By whom?
By the president.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I really appreciate the call. I'm late for a break. 219. Thanks for the call, Tom. This is WGN. If you follow politics, if you follow presidential politics, if you're just interested in where this country is going these days, a book that should be on your shelf is Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. The guy who wrote the book's been on this show before. He's a constitutional law professor and a political observer named Dave Schultz. He joins us again on WGN. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again, John.
First question. I mean, we had a lot to talk about today, but now that Jeff Sessions is out, I want to start there. He's resigned at the president's request. Do you know exactly what happens next, Dave? Does the president appoint a new attorney general? And then would that attorney general then maybe, or does Rod Rosenstein step up? Is he the attorney general now?
Well, what it looks like right now is that Rosenstein would be probably the acting attorney general at this point until such time as Donald Trump nominates and has somebody confirmed by the Senate. And that's the important part to remember here. The Constitution says that the Senate has to eventually do the confirmation. So the president can, you know, and who knows who he's going to pick? I have no idea at this point. There's probably lots of speculation. But right now, assuming that the resignation is effective immediately, Rosenstein is the acting attorney general. Much in the same way we might recall when Obama was leaving office, there was, and I forget her name now, she was a carryover from the Obama administration. She was the acting attorney general for Donald Trump for those first few weeks. I forget her name now, but you know who I mean. Yeah.
Sure. The one that was met with Bill Clinton on the tarmac, that one. The name will come to
me. No, it's a different person after that. I can't remember her name now. And the president and Trump fired her. I'm just blanking on her name at this point. But anyhow, the point is that Rosenstein should be the acting attorney general at this point.
Well, then, if the president appoints somebody and they're confirmed, then they can use that new authority to end the Mueller investigation, to direct the Mueller investigation, right? I mean, because that would be Rosenstein's boss. And while Sessions recused himself, I presume the new one the president's going to appoint won't. So that person would have oversight, right?
Would have oversight. But you're raising a good constitutional question regarding at this point whether or not that attorney general would have the ability to be able to end the investigation. I suspect probably the answer is yes, but I can see some constitutional questions being raised regarding whether or not that would happen. A president would be able to have an attorney general to do something like that. But more likely than not, I would say yes.
Yeah. By the way, I said that Sessions quit, but I'm reading online right now. Sessions was fired. Either way, he's no longer the attorney general.
He's out.
You know what surprised me last night on the coverage, Dave, was how quickly they went from, if the House is run by Democrats, what does that mean to the president? And immediately they started to talk not just about the Mueller investigation, they talked about committee oversight, and they started to talk about impeachment proceedings. What do you make of all of that?
Well, there's no question that, of course, that Congress has oversight authority over the executive branch. You know, they're funding all these different agencies. They have a right to know how that money's being spent, you know, in making sure that things are, you know, performing right. This is the whole concept of what? Checks and balances. But on the other hand, the idea of saying that we ought to be, or the Democrats are saying they ought to be moving towards impeaching the president of the United States. Remember, the Republicans control the Senate, and you can impeach somebody, but the Senate has to do a conviction. And even if the Democrats were to say, well, we're going to vote articles of impeachment, send it over to the Senate, I doubt you're going to get a conviction. Huh. Moreover, remember back when you were when Bill Clinton was president, the Republicans tried to push through the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I think it was in 97 or 98, and it failed. And there was a backlash against the Republicans in the election. If the Democrats were to push on the impeachment issue, I could see possibly in 2020 there being a backlash, you know, against them. So this may be something they want to be thinking seriously about regarding whether or not they want to make their major goal, get Donald Trump.
That's interesting because I know the House draws up the articles. My thought was they wouldn't care. They just would like to throw a wrench at him. You don't have to be convicted. They could still say he was impeached. And I thought Democrats would love to have that little happy dance if they could get it. But I guess they need to look beyond that, huh?
Yeah, I think politically they need to think beyond that because, again, going back to the Bill Clinton example here, is that rarely does one party lose seats when he gets in a presidential election year when a president's up for re-election. You know, generally they do fairly well. But the same thing here is that if the Democrats were now to say in a year when the president is up for election. And they're now moving to impeach him. How does this play out? Does Trump now work to his base and say, look, we told you they were just out to get us. The Democrats are just a bunch of obstructionists. That may not play well politically with the base. And more importantly, I'm not sure how well that plays with the broader electorate in the United States. That maybe not everybody agrees with that direction.
Your book was about the 10 states that matter. The 10 states that matter. It's all about swing states these days. So does that play in a non-presidential election year? And based on that, what do you make of the new landscape, either governor's races or what we saw in the Senate? I kind of like your take on just what happened last night, Dave Schultz. In a minute, you and I shared text a little bit last night. That's Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams in the Allstate Skyline studio. As we were watching the various TV stations cover the election, did you watch the basketball game at all last night between Duke and Kentucky?
I did not.
Oh,
no.
My God.
Was it good?
Kentucky, number two team in the country, really good, lost by 34.
Ooh.
They gave up 118 points to Duke, and Duke could have won that game by 50 points. I have never seen a highly ranked team like number two get so thoroughly trashed. And by the way, they will never be as good as Duke. Duke is on another planet right now.
My first thought there is that couldn't have happened to a better program.
A lot of people root for both of those programs, or against both of those programs, and for both of those programs. But it was entertaining to see these three freshmen just own the floor last night against number two, Kentucky. Wow, Northwestern. Hey, Loyola, you got your work cut out for you. I'm telling you right now. That was crazy. We've been visiting with Dave Schultz. He's a professor of political science at Hamline University and the author of a book about presidential swing states. He says there's only 10 that matter. And my question for Dave has been, okay, so based on what happened last night, what do you make of this sort of color composition of the country? Who gained? Who lost? I mean, talk a little bit about that, Dave. What did you think about what happened last night generally?
Well, two things I'm going to say here. First is think about what the Senate and the House look like now, is that the Senate, the Republican Senate, is more conservative than it was before, and the Democratic House is more liberal than it's before. They're moving in politically opposite directions, which is certainly not going to be the recipe for what political compromise. Second, if we look at the electorate, this is an electorate where the Democrats did well in the urban cores and in sort of the more affluent suburbs. And we have a new political geography now that the Democratic Party is going to be what looking like going forward now. It's a geography of those urban liberals, young people, people of color, suburban women, suburban area, that the Republican Party is going to be what? The men in suburbs. It's going to be rural areas. It's going to be individuals who have a high school degree but not college. So we're looking at very different electorates with very different geographic bases and play out what? With having control of two separate institutions, House versus Senate, going in politically different directions. That's what I walked away with from last night.
Your book is Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. Wisconsin has been one of those swing states, right?
Correct.
And what do you make of Scott Walker conceding the governor's race?
Well, this was a surprise, you know, because remember a few years ago, Scott Walker was a rising star in the Republican Party, and no longer so, obviously, now. But again, very, very close race. And I'm going to say that it's very hard, of course, to win a third term for governor in a lot of places. Not impossible. I think that's one factor. But I do think that Wisconsin, Scott Walker got caught up in the anti-Trump fever that we saw sweeping the country. And especially if you look at the turnouts in Milwaukee proper, in Dane County, you know, which is where Madison is, they were exceedingly high. And I think they were what, a large part, put Scott Walker out of office in the same way that it put lots of Republicans out of office in suburbs across the United States.
How is it that the House picked up the seats it did and several governor's seats flipped blue, but the Senate went the other way? So I'm trying to figure out what that means about where America is right now.
Well, first off, the Senate was always a long shot for the Democrats, that there were 35 seats in the Senate up for election. Democrats were defending 26. In 10 of those states, they were senators who were running in states that Donald Trump had won 2 years ago. So it was a steep climb for Democrats there to start with. But flip side is the reason why they did well in terms of the House of Representatives is that the battleground was in the suburbs. And pretty much there were no Democrats in suburbs who were really in swing seats or in danger, versus the estimate was well in excess of 70 Republicans in suburban areas who were considered to be in vulnerable districts. And so it's really about geography here in many ways, or political geography, in terms of how the lay of the land was set up, what kind of seats we're talking about. Are we talking about, you know, overall state versus talking about Senate seats? A lot of that came into play.
You know, the last thing I was just wondering last night, Dave, and I don't know that anybody knows the answer to this, but you say, okay, well, you know, the Senate is maybe more important than the House, but the House is the people's branch of the government. And I'm just wondering what was more representative of the tone of the country right now. Maybe it's the governor's offices. Maybe it's the Senate. Maybe it's the president. I don't know. But I literally was wondering, I wonder if more votes were cast in aggregate for Democrats last night, or did more people vote for Republicans? And if that was telling in any way.
More for Democrats, including in the Senate. If we look at it, even though the Republicans held the Senate and increased the number of seats that they held, if we actually look at the number of votes cast for senators, more were cast for Democratic ballots than were cast for Republican ballots for Senate. And the same thing, by the way, in the House of Representatives. So the Democrats actually did exceedingly well. I haven't seen the final numbers, but around 56% of the votes that were cast last night, I think 56%, give or take, we'll give a better number probably in the next 24 hours, were cast for Democrats.
It's nice to talk to you again, Dave. Anything else you want me to hear before I hang up on you?
I think the only thing I want for you to hear is to think in terms of how this all starts to play out for what? The 2020 election, because it's now starting.
I don't want to do that, Dave. Don't make me do that. I don't want to talk about presidential swing states.
But that's right.
Why only 10 matter. Thank you, Dave Schultz over at Hamlin. We'll visit again, my friend.
Anytime. Bye.
You know, yesterday on the show, we were talking about all of these ballot initiatives. So which way do you think this one went? In the event marijuana is legalized, did you see this on your ballot yesterday? Should the city of Chicago appropriate revenue from the sale of marijuana to increase funding for public schools and mental health? I mean, who couldn't be for that? That's what I call a loaded question. 88% voted in favor of taking the revenue from the sale of marijuana and giving it to the schools and mental health services, which is different than should we legalize recreational marijuana. But when you put it that way, how could you be against it? Should the city of Chicago ban the use of plastic straws within corporate city limits? Elif, did you see how this one went? You've got that long face like, oh, I don't like the looks of this one at all. Which way did that one go? Should the city of Chicago ban the use of plastic straws?
I think more people voted yes on that.
But just barely, 55. 55% said yes, 45% said no.
That's still saying something.
I think people think that that's just being a little too nitpicky, you know? And by the way, it's not about plastic cups. It's about plastic straws. So if I don't have my plastic straws, now what am I going to do? How am I going to drink my Diet Coke? People prefer straws. I mean, literally, what's the solution? And somebody said, well, get a reusable steel straw. I'm not going to do that. I'm not carrying around a reusable steel straw.
It's more work for the waitresses because now they don't bring the straws. And then you got to ask them for a straw. And then they never bring your straw. So then you got to ask for a straw again. It's horrible.
Why are the straws targeted here? Is that because they're the thing we can most easily do without? I mean,
I think so.
And why aren't there plastic? Like, I've got a coffee cup here with a plastic cup on it.
I believe the reason is that there's a photo that's viral of a turtle with a straw in its nose, and I'm not making that up. It's tragic, and you go, God dang, people, what are we doing here? And a lot's been made about that in the ocean, but as you know, we have no dolphins in Cook County. So you go, okay, does this really matter that much? You know who's behind this initiative big time? Shedd Aquarium.
Yeah, sure they are. I've talked to them about it. I forgot.
I'm going to have them on my show pretty soon about this very thing.
Are you going to confront them with your anti-environment statistics?
It's going to come up.
I'm sure.
Should the city of Chicago, how about this one, seek that the state of Illinois, stay with me now, create a homeowner's property tax exemption? Should we give a property tax break to people who live in large cities, towns over 500,000, of which we have a handful? If they've been in that house for 10 years and their income is under $100,000, you know what this is about. It's about people who own their home or nearly do so. They've lived there a real long time. They ain't getting rich. The property taxes are going up, and it's hard for them to stay in the house just because of the property taxes.
Right, they're getting taxed out of their house.
So should we put an exemption on the property tax for them? I don't know if that means they don't pay it or if we put a cap on it, but we need to help those people out, right?
Yes.
No.
We are all in different places.
We need to encourage growth and the neighborhoods to go up. And
what?
Violetta's theory is that we need to push those people out. If you can't pay your property taxes, you're probably not maintaining your home as nicely. And if we want these neighborhoods to get better, to get younger, and to grow, sorry, Grandma,
property
you're out.
Taxes go in a circle. The whole neighborhood is assessed at that value. So if you're...
Well, you would still be assessed at the value, but you just wouldn't have to pay the full bill.
Shouldn't they, though? Shouldn't they pay the bill? They should pay their fair share.
I don't know. What if you're 78 years old, you've lived in the house for 40 years, and you...
It's time to move somewhere else.
You know what, Violetta?
That's been her song. No, she's serious about that.
Where?
I don't think so.
And she's not alone in that. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Where are you going to move, Violetta?
I'm not one of them.
A retirement home? I don't know. With a loved one?
Boy, this sounds very cold, V.
Let me tell you something, Violetta. As you get to a certain age, you know, I bought my house 25 years ago, something like that, 20.
Yeah.
And so it's cheaper for me, and we've talked about this on my show, it's cheaper for me to stay in a big house than it is to downsize to a smaller house because of the increase in cost of housing.
What you owe on that house isn't what it would cost to get into a new one.
Right. So it's economical for me to stay in this house. Now, if I get to be 80 and I'm in this house and I don't have any income and the taxes keep going up...
And maybe you've got that house paid off. I know. Okay, don't fight, you guys.
No, we're not fighting.
No. I mean, that's the yin and the yang of it. 79% are in favor of giving those people a break. Now, what about the one about firearms?
I'm sorry people aren't watching Violetta on the computer because
she's clicking
away. I don't roll my eyes often, but
wow.
I did.
So anyway, I have a question about the firearms issue on the ballot. Here's today's WGN Radio News click.
The U.S. House and Senate are now split. A, I'm happy about this. B, oh, great, now nothing will get done, John.
Yesterday we asked you about the Blackhawks firing Coach Q. 57% of you said that's the wrong call. 43% obviously are on the other side of that. You had this referendum question on the ballot, or at least many of us saw it yesterday. Should the state of Illinois strengthen penalties for the illegal trafficking of firearms and require all gun dealers to be certified by the state? 90% in Cook County said yup. 92% in the city of Chicago said yup. Bruce Rauner last month said he would veto that if it was put before him. J.B. Pritzker on the campaign trail said that he would sign the gun dealer licensing bill. This is a little more of J.B. Pritzker from last night. Part two, if you will, of his speech.
We're the land of Abraham Lincoln and Barack Obama. We're home to the world's largest ketchup bottle, the first McDonald's franchise, and the original ice cream sundae. We taught America how to debate and how to shuffle in the Super Bowl. and how to properly eat a pizza. We beat a curse to win a World Series. Superman lived in Metropolis, Illinois, and if he wanted to leap the tallest building, he only had to travel to downtown Chicago. We brought Oprah Winfrey into the nation's living rooms and Michelle Obama into the world's hearts. We were the first to ratify the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery. And the latest to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. We don't need to be afraid of our history here in Illinois. Who we are is how we overcome our biggest challenges. We work to mend broken places. We light the journey from hill to hilltop and recognize that there is grace and courage and pride in the struggle to rise. And ladies and gentlemen, rise we will.
I don't know who wrote that. If JB did, I didn't know you could write so well. I guarantee you, I didn't know you could speak like that. That was part of his speech last night. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, ready to entertain and inform right around the corner. And Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis. Gosh, what are you going to talk about today, kids?
Nothing. We were going to do, we're going to talk about flower and gardening for the fall, how to get
Hot
your flowers
topic.
Ready. For,
folks yeah. care about that.
Yeah, that is true, though. People actually do care
do
about
care
that.
I do care about that.
You could light up the lines with that.
I know, but you almost need a moment. We're not going to provide that, but you almost need a breather, of getting away from all of this to talk about whether your hostas are hot.
Anna, force him to do a cooking segment. Come
I
on, will.
I love cooking. I'm big in cooking, so maybe we'll work something in. I don't think so though.
You're big in cooking, or would you
big
have
on
a show?
Cooking. I love cooking. No, I'm not big in cooking. I'm big on. Loving cooking.
I know.
Coming out right.
I get it. I'm with you. All right, so John, you asked a question. Unfortunately, I'll answer it for you. Stan Bowman is going to join us, actually. Coming up, we're going to talk about Coach Q.
Nice.
That's coming up in a few minutes. But we also have all of the breaking news. Ben Bradley will be here. Lester Holt will be here. Renato Mariotti will talk about the fact that Jeff Sessions has been fired. That didn't take long, did it?
Wow.
I think you were right about that, Ro. You said it'd be probably the next day. And I thought, no, there'll be a few days, a few weeks.
Yeah. Scaramucci will be here. The Mooch. Mark McKinnon will be here. And the most powerful Republican left in Illinois will join us to talk about what happened here in the state last night.
Kinzinger?
I'm trying to think of who that would be.
He'll be a special guest. People will have to guess who the most...
What time is this? What time is that?
That one. Thank you very much. You're the best, John. That's at 4:40 this afternoon.
See you guys.
Bye. Bye.
Bye, John.
All right. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn Cars for Kids, bringing you Jude Pilock's news.